First elected to the Florida House in 2010, Richard Corcoran now represents District 37, which includes Central Pasco County. Following the last election, he got the nod from his fellow lawmakers to be Florida's House Speaker beginning this year. Mr. Corcoran is our Florida Matters newsmaker.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of Bay Care Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. Bay Care's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper, and we welcome Speaker-designate Richard Corcoran.
Thanks for having me on, Carson.
You actually become Speaker in November, right?
That's correct.
So you were a Jeb Bush supporter for the Republican nomination for president. Now that it's apparent that Donald Trump has a nomination, will you support your party's nomination for president?
It's a great question. What I've said to people is that I know that I'm not going to be supporting Hillary Clinton. And I think that what's important and what I like about what's going on right now with the nomination is that I think justifiably I would put myself in that category is that there is a revolt against party leaders and the party bosses because for too long we've had people who have said one thing on a campaign and governed another way. And it got to the point where now people are frustrated and they want significant change. And I always say that to people. I've only been in the legislature for 5 years. In that 5 years, Carson, my fights have been not against the unions or the liberals or the Democrats or the socialists or the communists. My fights have been against my own party leaders wanting to do stuff that violated our principles. And so for me, it all comes down to our principles and what we believing in the Constitution, believing in the rule of law, believing in a free enterprise system.
During an appearance at the Florida Chamber's Capitol Days earlier this year, you said we are the reason Donald Trump is doing so well. You were blaming your own Republican Party for that.
Yeah, it's because for too long we've had leaders who have campaigned one way and governed another. And so just in my 5 years, we've had to stand up to our Republican leaders to say, no, we're not going to do a massive Obamacare expansion that at the end of the day would actually hurt the very people you're trying to help. We stood up to them and said, no, we're not going to allow for corporate welfare. We're not going to give $250 million, $100 million, all this money to the wealthy elite insiders. And so these are all fights that we've had against our own party and our own party leaders. And so when I was saying that's what was the fervor and the impetus behind this, what I call a revolution that's happening right now. And I love the revolution. I love the fact that finally, hopefully, we can get to a place where people actually govern according to those principles and govern courageously with those principles. But we'll see if the leader of the revolution is capable of doing that.
I sort of sense that your frustration also trickles down into the state's political system. You said essentially Tallahassee, you come to fight for voters in Tallahassee, and then all too often that fight isn't won or even waged. Is Tallahassee broken?
Washington, D.C. is broken. Tallahassee, I think, is not nearly as broken. And I talk about this a lot, Carson, where you had two revolutions at the exact same time that happened in world history, and they were two superpower countries, France and the United States. France's constitution was based on the philosophy of Rousseau. Ours was based on the philosophy of Locke and Hobbes, and that's a significant difference. Well, we're still on our first constitution. They're on their 16th, 17th, 18th constitution in that same time period. But the underlying premise of that gave birth to a checks and balances and a separation of powers in our Constitution. We have two things, modern-day checks and balances and separations, that they don't have, and that's term limits. You only get 8 years, and then you're forcibly told you can no longer make a career out of being a politician. And then the other one is that we have a constitutional balanced budget amendment.
How will you be different from House Speaker Steve Crisafulli?
Steve, I think, viewed the office, and he came in because there was a loss of a speaker. And so Steve came in and he viewed, steadying the ships, managing the House of Representatives, managing the flow. I would probably guess, I hope, that I'll be in our group of our class. We had one of the largest classes in the history of the House, that we'd be more disruptive. I mean, our goal is to go in there, and there's so many things that need to be fixed and cleaned up, from ethics reform to judicial reform. And so our hope is that we'll be very disruptive.
Can you describe Governor Scott's relationship with the legislature over the years? How's it evolved?
Well, I knew Governor Scott before he was governor, and so I've always had a good relationship with him. And I people ask sometimes, well, is he hard to get to? Does he not reach out to the legislature enough or those types of things? I've never had that experience. I mean, I could pick up the phone today, call him, and he's very diligent about calling right back. And I think his relationship with the legislature, I don't know that it's just with the legislature. I really don't know that he wasn't as accessible and was willing to listen in my first 2 years as in these last 2 years.
Does he ever call you up?
Yeah, all the time. No, we get together and spend time together. I've spent hours and hours with in one sitting with Governor Scott talking about policy issues, things, the future.
You know, one thing that's very unusual is that redistricting means everyone is at the mercy of voters this year. How might that change the goings-on in Tallahassee once the dust settles from all this?
Well, the redistricting changes that are in effect for this coming cycle. It doesn't affect the House of Representatives because our map was found to be constitutional, but it affects the state Senate races and the congressional races. And you've seen that already. Because of those changes, we'll have the second largest probably incoming freshman class into the House because all these House members are jumping for Senate or for congressional races. I think the districts are very competitive. And so it's I think Florida, as it is on the presidential race, is pretty much ground zero for a lot of races, including the congressional races. The U.S. Senate race is going to be heavily contested and could tilt the balance in the U.S. Senate. And same with the Florida Senate. They're six seats away from being tied. So we'll see how competitive they are and how it plays itself out.
My guest is incoming Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran, and you and lobbyists. Let's talk about this for a second. You've called out the fact that you can serve 8 years in Tallahassee, then turn around and be a lobbyist, and you don't like that.
That's correct. And so it's not just me, it's our class. We really, when we got in elected as freshmen, we said, you know what, let's write down what we would do right now while we're still, you know, unaffected by the process. And these are a lot of the things that we wrote down as a class. And now we're going to get to hopefully be seniors and be able to lead the institution. But yeah, the thought process that in any state, you can serve for 8 years. And in your last 2 years, you have a tremendous position of power, whether it be an appropriations chairman or a speaker or a president. And you use those 2 years to, in essence, feather your nest. I mean, that's the institution to help people. And you're using it. Which is an honor that's bestowed upon you, and you're using it to make, you know, figure out a way to make $1 million afterwards, working with the very people who are asking for things that aren't in the best interest of those people. That's got to stop. And so we passed it last year off the House floor, couldn't get a hearing in the Senate, all Republican Senate, majority Republican, 26 out of 40 members. So now we're looking to put it in our rules. We'll put it in our rules and say, okay, fine, the Senate doesn't want to have these kind of ethics reforms, we'll do it in our House rules.
In some respects, though, aren't former lawmakers among the best guides for incoming lawmakers when it comes to understanding some complex policy issues? Former Palmetto lawmaker Ralph Haben likened it to a professional football player who quits playing and somebody says to them, hey, you know what? You've been doing this a long time. Have you thought about coming back to the team and being the offensive coordinator? What about that?
I know former Speaker Haben, but I would say it's a repulsive analogy. You're talking about a football player who learns a skill, has a degree of expertise, and then taking that skill and expertise and then right afterwards becoming a coach and coaching players. There isn't a third entity. And the third entity that deals with the legislature is we represent the people of the United States of America. We represent the people of the state of Florida. We represent the people of Pasco County. I have a burden of 160,000 people who need health care, who need education, who need all these things. The correct analogy would be if I wanted to be a coach and the only way to be a coach was to tank the football game, and I tank the football game so I can be a coach. That's what's going on in the legislature. Mm. And that would never be tolerated in a football game.
Lots of lawmakers make that switch, though. Former House Speaker Dean Cannon, forced out by term limits in 2012, he soon became a lobbyist. Senate President Mike Herodopoulos at that same time did as well. In fact, I saw a statistic where I think one out of seven lawmakers end up being lobbyists.
Well, I think there's, we have 120 legislators. There's 4,000 lobbyists. I think there's there might even be more than that, Carson. I have to look at the latest numbers, but they're all over the place. But the reality is this: is that you know, going back to our founding fathers, we can fix it with checks and balances. We can say this is, you know, but we have to put those in law so that mankind is not tempted to violate them.
Are term limits to blame for inexperience in the legislature?
No, the term limits have been one of the greatest blessings of the legislature. I started as a staffer pre-term limits, and now I serve as an elected member with term limits. And I will tell you that there is, you know, there's nothing better than for lack of a better term, a flushing of the process. When you get people, anytime you give anybody something for life, it is abjectly going to lead to corruption. It's abjectly going to lead to laziness and ineffectiveness. When, you know, new blood is a good thing, and it's pure hubris, it's arrogance to say that if you know, Richard Corcoran or somebody who serves these 8 years and now we force him out, now there's going to be this huge vacuum and loss of knowledge. It's not true. There's millions of talented people in our state and our country, and term limits is the one thing that I think is the one of the ways to turn around the broken Washington.
I know you feel that way not only about lawmakers but judges as well, and we'll talk about that and some of your other legislative priorities coming up. If it's not too soon, the 2017 session doesn't start until next March. When we continue, my guest is incoming Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran of Land O'Lakes, our Florida Matters newsmaker. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Kirsten Cooper. My guest is Florida House Speaker Designate Richard Corcoran of Land O'Lakes. You know, it seems like a long way off, but our next regular legislative session begins March 7th, 2017. That will be after a new U.S. president is elected. How might a Clinton or a Trump presidency, the presumed nominees, how might their presidencies affect what's going on in Florida?
Well, the biggest thing I think that we would hope for from a lawmaking perspective is, you know, we are, as a state, we send up our tax dollars through the income tax, and then the federal government gives that money back, not proportionally, but that's how it works. What we would like to see is right now, over the last 15, 20 years, federal government has just got a stranglehold and using the power of the purse to determine policy. So you see that in education with, you know, if you want these dollars, you got to do this Common Core educational program. If you want these health care dollars, you have to have this type of Medicaid system set up for the safety net. And what we would like to see, and I would think that it will be widely discussed if the Republicans win, is that give us block grants. Just give us that money back and let us decide what's best for our people, because we know them. We work with them. We go to church with them. We go to supermarkets with them. We know what they need, and we can craft something far better than what the federal government's trying to do.
A proposed Medicaid expansion has been soundly defeated in Tallahassee ever since the idea came up. Could that change in a non-election year?
So the reason we stopped Medicaid expansion was because you're lying to the people, and that's cruelty. That's not good governance. That's not being smart or wise. That's pure cruelty. And what we offered was a plan that gave those people real private insurance and treated them just like you, me, or anyone else who has private insurance.
During the 2016 session earlier this year, you complained that the House's priorities were languishing in the Senate. Examples: term limits for state Supreme Court justices, gun bills, including open carry and carry on campus, I believe. Aside from the possibility that the Senate just hated those bills, I mean, why has that been happening?
I think that there's always a tension between the House and Senate in all 50 states except Nebraska, of course, because they only have a unicameral legislature. But there's always been that tension. You see it in Washington, D.C. The difference between the House and the Senate in the last couple terms is, I would say, that the House is very principled and conservative. And I'd say the House is very much anti-special interests. And I think when you look at those proposals, you know, we sent over an Uber proposal to try to get an Uber bill passed. The concept that you could have a free market program where you can hit an app and get a cleaner car, get it faster, it's safer, and it's less expensive, that you can't get that kind of a free market solution for the consumers in this state when they're clamoring for it through a legislative body tells me that that legislative body is not truly free market, and they truly do not have their ear to the ground of what the people want, which means that the special interests have too much control over that chamber.
So are you saying Senate President Andy Gardner was under too much control of special interests?
I honestly, Carson, there's so much vitriol, and I try never to name names. I think what we need is people to lead based on principles. And if I was to encourage my colleagues across the hall, all of them, I would say it's time to say what those principles are that you believe. Do you believe in the Constitution? Do you believe in the rule of law? Do you believe in a free enterprise system and the benefits to come? And if those are the things that you truly believe, then govern that way.
Now, I don't want to get too inside baseball here. I got to ask you, there seems to be a lot of politics involved when it comes to electing House speakers. You've warned candidates not to be distracted by politics. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, what happens, the way it works is that once you get elected, you immediately start vying to get a speakership. And so what we've said to – and now it's moved into the election. So before people are even elected, they're, you know, before they've even been given the honor of representing a group of people, they're out there campaigning to become a speaker or a presiding officer. If you really believe in free markets, you believe in a free market competition to be a leader.
This is Florida Matters. My guest is incoming Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran of Land O'Lakes. One of your priorities has been to grow the state's teacher bonus program, Best and Brightest. It failed this year. Will it be back?
So what failed was making it permanent.
Making it permanent, yes. Right. Okay.
But it did pass again. It passed with an increase of over $5 million. And I think it's something that's here to stay. And the reason is because it's factual. And there's so much stuff that's distorted about that. But the great economists from University of Chicago have studied it. In 1960, the classroom teachers that we had in our schools were in the top 10% or 20% of academic test scores going into college. So the brightest kids with the highest scores who went into college, top 20% or 10%, they ended up being in our classrooms. Now you move forward to 2015. It is the bottom 10%. The bottom 10% of our academic test scores are now in our classrooms. And during that same time, you have seen a dramatic drop in the performance of our students. And so the reason for that was because in 1960, it was a different world. Your very, very bright women, they were teachers or nurses. Now in 2015, the ceiling's gone. They can be doctors, lawyers, accountants, venture capitalists. And so you've seen once that ceiling got taken off, we lost a tremendous amount of our best and brightest teachers in the classroom. And when you have those teachers in the classroom, the number one country in the world on the international test is Finland. They pay their teachers higher than anyone else, and they have, guess what, the top 20% test scorers are in the classroom.
The SAT score is a factor in determining the bonuses. The state's largest teachers union has filed a lawsuit saying discriminates against older teachers because they have to go so far back to find their SAT scores, and they couldn't meet the deadline. Has that problem been fixed?
Yeah. First of all, I'll say two things on that one. Let me talk about the teachers union and their lawsuits. As far as on the best and brightest, they threw everything against the wall. It was discriminatory for age, race, all those things. All of them have been chucked, and they'll continue to be chucked out of the courts. Now, as far as the teachers union filing lawsuits, I would like to say to them that they ought to stop. Can I get the teachers union for 1 minute to fight for school children and fight for parents? They don't. All they care about is their union bosses. And I'll give you a perfect example. Another lawsuit that they have filed takes 80,000 low-income kids. 80,000, 70% of those kids are minorities. Those children were in failing schools, but they were able to get a scholarship and go to another school where they could get an absolute fair chance in life and a real education. And the teachers' union is filing a lawsuit to kick those 80,000 kids out of their schools where they're thriving and doing well and put them back into failing schools.
The tax credit scholarship.
That's correct.
Yeah. Got to wonder, though, an SAT score from 1987, is that a really good way to gauge teaching ability?
Well, first of all, it's not the program does two things. It looks at your effectiveness in a classroom and your aptitude. The aptitude of our teachers in 1960, when we had a much better system of education, was the highest at any point in the United States of America. So you need both things.
Let's talk about some of your other legislative priorities for 2017. We've talked about lobbyists. What about term limits on judges?
Again, you know, I've said this openly. We just take the last 60 days, Carson. The Supreme Court finally ruled after 3 years They finally ruled on a workers' comp case. That means every single worker for 3 years is wondering, am I covered? Am I safe? Is my family going to be protected? Not sure how the rule's going to come down. Every single employer is thinking, you know, what are my responsibilities? Do I need to put aside more money? Do I need to, you know, what are those? For 3 years, it languishes in a Supreme Court. They finally rule, and they rule that it's facially unconstitutional, the fee structure, when literally, you know, 10 years earlier, they did not rule on a fee case that it was facially unconstitutional. The District Court of Appeals that got the case first, there wasn't even a dissent that said it was facially unconstitutional, let alone they supported the law. But when you have a Supreme Court that is that unaccountable, when you give someone, like I said earlier, something for life, they're going to be lazy and they're going to be arrogant and they're going to abuse the system. And that's what we have in our judiciary. And the only way to rein that back in, the only checks and balances we have to restrain that kind of behavior is to put term limits on judges. Just like, I don't care if you're the governor, I don't care if you're an attorney general, I don't care if you're a state representative like me, nobody in this country should have something for life. And that goes back to Jefferson. Jefferson fought with Hamilton over this way back in the founding days and said nobody should have anything for life.
Universal school choice. What about that?
Well, we have universal school choice.
Yeah.
Right, this is what I say to everyone. Right now, we are 100% voucherized system in the state of Florida. Every single person who has a child in the school system, I send my money to Tallahassee. Tallahassee sends that money for my child to go to school, sends it to a local bureaucrat, and that bureaucrat makes the decision on where my child can go to school. So we have bureaucratic vouchers. Every single person in Florida has a bureaucratic voucher. And I'm sorry, and I don't think this is a novel idea, Carson, but I think that parents probably have a better idea what's best for that child. So do we want a bureaucratic voucher, which is what we have right now, or do you want a parent voucher?
Will the gun bills be back?
What will always be back is our principles. You know, we will govern from our principles. And does the Second Amendment matter? Absolutely it matters. Does the First Amendment matter? Yes, absolutely. So, yes, we will govern from our principles and we will protect our Constitution at all costs.
Another bill that failed this year was a mandatory school recess for kids in elementary school. Some parents in this area really lobbied hard for that. You probably had a visit or two from parents in Tallahassee this past year because of that.
Yeah, no, I've met with them numerous times, and it's a great group. And I think what happened with the bill is it went too far. And one of the things that happened in talking to the group, and now for coming back next year, they're going to take it out of the bill, and so I think it has a great chance of passage. But it said that you couldn't punish a kindergartner or a first grader. You couldn't use recess as a punishment. I have six children. You know, I picked up my son the other day from school, and I said, "How was school?" And he goes, "Well, it was good, but I got." Sat out of recess for 5 minutes. And it bothered him because he wants to play in recess. But guess what it did? It helped governor's behavior. And you can't take those tools away from our classroom teachers. And so you take that out of the bill, come back with the new language they're going to have, and I think it'll pass this year.
The legislature gave supervisors of elections raises this year, but most other state employees have gone another year without raises. Will that ever change?
Well, first of all, I would say that if I was to rank, and it's hard because there's a lot of them, but if I was to rank my top bills that passed that were repugnant, giving elected officials who voluntarily run for office, who voluntarily go to the people and beg them and say, elect me as your supervisor. And then for them, as soon as they get elected, to go up there and say, we need upwards, for some of them, $25,000 more a year when they're already making over $100,000 a year, was one of the most disappointing bills that passed. Of course, me and 50-some other members voted against it. But it passed by one or two votes out of the House, and then our hope was the governor would veto it, and he didn't. But that's a terrible bill.
The Hillsborough County has been dealing with this murky issue of ride-sharing services like Uber. A House bill that would have prevented local governments from banning those services failed. Is that fight over?
To your point, it failed last year, again, because of the Senate. But I will tell you that I think that bill will be out of the House probably in the first week of session and go to the Senate. And now you have with these new members from the House going over to the Senate, hopefully in the election cycle, or more principally mind free market conservatives, I think that bill will pass, and I know the governor will sign it.
There are a dozen states pushing back against the Obama administration's directive on the use of public school bathrooms. The Kansas Senate may prevent transgender students from using any bathroom other than the one that corresponds to their birth sex. Will Florida lawmakers get involved in this, take up similar measures?
Yeah, I've already asked staff to and our legal staff to look into it. Again, I'm disappointed that our Attorney General and Governor have not joined with 11 other states and filed a lawsuit against that rule. But and to the extent that we can do it as a legislature, yeah, I will fight that every possible way I can. The thought that you're going to force upon 99 points, you know, some percent of the population, something that affects 0.008% of the population, and is disruptive and unsafe, how that stuff even gets passed is beyond me.
We're going to be getting various revenue estimates throughout the year, but the one that the governor uses to base his budget on won't be out until later this year. So at this point, you know, knowing what you know, do you believe Florida is in pretty good financial shape?
We're not at the highs that we were, that you saw in the, you know, early 2000s. Some of those years we had $3, $4 billion in excess funds from the growth. But I think as a whole, we are in a good situation, and it's because the indicators, you know, you see in our unemployment rate has dropped. You see that our number of people that are moving to the state is back up to almost 1,000 a day. And that growth is because of more jobs and more opportunities. And because of that, you see an increase in our sales tax revenues. So, yeah, we're not at the highs that we saw probably in the glory years of the early 2000s, but we're certainly doing very well.
Well, finally, if nothing else gets done during the next session, if nothing else, what is the one thing closest to you that must hit the governor's desk?
Listen, if we can get education right on the K-12 level, and if you can give every single child a world-class education, it takes care of almost every other aspect of the budget. You're going to have people who are wage earners and doing well, so you're going to have a good economy. You're going to have less incidences of juvenile justice or criminal justice, and so that saves you money there. They're going to be better citizens as a whole, and they're going to take care of the environment. They're going to do all those things that make a society great, but it all starts with them having a well-rounded education, and that education should teach them how to think. That education should teach them how to be good citizens and a contributing member of a society. The purpose of an education is not to get a job. The purpose of an education is to raise up a brilliant thinking citizen for our state and our country.
Our Florida Matters newsmaker, House Speaker Designate Richard Corcoran, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Carson.
You can follow all the goings-on in Tallahassee throughout the year and heading into next year's session at WUSFnews.org. We invite your questions and comments, as always. Visit our website or our Facebook page. Florida Matters is produced by Mary Shedden, engineered by Richard Jimenez, and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.